Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Trademarks and the Disparagement Clause Edition. I'm your host, Christopher Goffis. On June 19, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Mattal v. Tam. Simon Tam of The Slants, an Asian-American rock band, applied to register the band's name with the U.S. Trademark Office, but the application was denied. The office claimed that the name would likely be disparaging towards persons of Asian descent, citing the Disparagement Clause of the Lanham Act of 1946, which prohibits trademarks that consist of or comprise immoral, deceptive, or scandalous matter, or matter which may disparage or falsely suggest a connection with persons, living or dead, institutions, beliefs, or national symbols, or bring them into contempt or disrepute. Tam appealed to a board within the office, but was again denied. On appeal, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit ultimately held en banc that the Disparagement Clause violated the First Amendment on its face. By a vote of 8-0, the Supreme Court affirmed the judgment of the Federal Circuit. In an opinion by Justice Alito, the court held that the Disparagement Clause of the Lanham Act violates the First Amendment's Free Speech Clause. Parts 1, 2, and 3A of Justice Alito's majority opinion were joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas joined except for Part 2. Parts 3B, 3C, and 4 of Justice Alito's majority opinion were joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Thomas and Breyer. Justice Kennedy filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment, in which Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. And now, to discuss the case, we have Michael R. Houston, who is Associate Attorney at Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, LLP.
This case concerns the Supreme Court's growing and popular dance rock band docket. Actually, no, it's a case about the First Amendment. So the case concerns the disparagement provision of the Lanham Act for the registration of federal trademarks. The court ultimately struck down the statute, 8-0. Justice Gorsuch did not participate. The case got lots of attention because it will have a direct impact on the Washington Redskins' ability to retain their own trademark. They had parallel litigation that was running at the same time. And as I mentioned, although the result of the case is unanimous, the reasoning is divided, and several important portions of the opinion don't have a majority or even a plurality. I co-authored an amicus brief in support of Mr. Tam for the Chamber of Commerce of the United States in this case, but my comments today here are just mine alone. Simon Tam was the respondent in this case. He's the lead singer of a dance rock band called The Slants. He and his bandmates are Asian American, and they chose that name deliberately in order to reclaim that racial slur. Some of their songs challenge stereotypes about Asian Americans. Mr. Tam applied for but was denied a trademark for The Slants because of the Lanham Act's disparagement provision, which is 15 U.S. Code 1052A. It prohibits the registration of a trademark that, quote, may disparage persons living or dead, institutions, beliefs, or national symbols, or bring them into contempt or disrepute. It didn't matter to the PTO that Mr. Tam's intent for his mark was not to disparage. It was enough that a substantial number of persons could perceive the mark to be disparaging. Tam appealed to the Federal Circuit, which, sitting en banc, held that the disparagement provision was unconstitutional, and then the Supreme Court took the case. In the unanimous portion of the Supreme Court's opinion, the court first dealt with a brief statutory argument that the disparagement provision didn't actually reach Mr. Tam's mark because he argued it didn't apply to groups, disparagement of groups as opposed to persons. The court made quick work of that, and you can consult the opinion if you're particularly interested in that statutory holding. But the bulk of the opinion is dedicated to the court's ultimate holding that the statute violates the First Amendment. In the unanimous portion, the court rejected the government's argument, the lead argument, that trademarks are government speech rather than private speech. The Supreme Court's doctrine has long held that when the government is speaking, it has fairly wide latitude, and the sort of protections of the First Amendment that normally operate on the government don't apply. The court said here, importantly, that it will, quote, exercise great caution before extending its government speech precedents, because if private speech could be passed off as government speech simply by affixing a government seal of approval, then that would be an opportunity for the government to silence or muffle disfavored viewpoints. And just as a brief aside, this portion of the opinion could actually be quite significant to future cases. We've seen litigation in recent months around the country where the government has attempted to mandate certain statements and then say, for example, brought to you by the city of San Francisco. And I think this opinion is a rebuke of the idea that the government can label a message as its own and then cure any First Amendment difficulty. So back to the opinion. The court said that it was far-fetched, quote, to suggest that the content of trademarks is government speech. The government doesn't dream up these messages or edit them, and the court called attention to the enormously wide range of things that have been registered as federal trademarks, many of which, as highlighted in various briefs that were filed with the court, are really quite unseemly. It simply makes no sense to say that the government is the author of all of these messages. As Justice Alito, the author of the portion of the opinion, put it, if the government is speaking through trademarks, then it is, quote, babbling prodigiously and incoherently. One of the government's main arguments on this point was the recent case Walker v. Sons of Confederate Veterans, decided a few years ago, which held that Texas's specialty license plate program was government speech rather than private speech. But the court said that likely marks the outer bounds of the government speech doctrine, and it said that trademarks are unlike specialty license plates in basically every respect that matters. They have not been historically used by the government to convey messages. They're not closely aligned in the mind of the public with the state. The last sort of point on this was that if trademarks were government speech, then copyright registrations would likely also be. But even the government did not argue that it could refuse to copyright a work on the ground that it disparaged particular persons. The remainder of the court's opinion, as I mentioned, was divided, and no portion gathered a majority of the court. The court responded to the government's arguments that the trademark program is just a subsidy program, and that trademarks are merely commercial speech that are entitled to less First Amendment protection. So Justice Alito's opinion for four justices, which was joined by the Chief Justice, Justice Thomas, and Justice Breyer, first rejected the argument that trademarks are a permissible limitation on government subsidies for speech, similar to the programs that were upheld in cases like Rust v. Sullivan or NEA v. Finley. Justice Alito said that all of those cases involved cash subsidies or their equivalents, and they are not applicable to more broad programs like trademarks, fishing licenses, or driver's licenses. Justice Alito similarly rejected the government's argument that this case is analogous to cases where the government has approved limitations on public where the court has approved limitations on public employers' ability to collect union dues for employees. Justice Alito's opinion said those too are just subsidy cases. They confer a substantial benefit to serve a particular purpose. Whereas here, the government was creating a broad registration system for a wide range of views. Justice Alito also rejected an argument that the government had established a permissible, quote, limited public forum with the trademark system. Even in such a forum, the longstanding doctrine is that viewpoint discrimination is prohibited. And Justice Alito's opinion concluded that this anti-disparagement provision is an instance of viewpoint discrimination, because giving offense is a viewpoint, in the words of the court. Laws that prohibit expression because they are likely to offend are unconstitutional and have been for centuries under Supreme Court precedent. And then the last portion of Justice Alito's opinion addressed the government's argument that trademarks are commercial speech and so only receive relaxed First Amendment scrutiny. Justice Alito found it unnecessary to decide this question because he said the disparagement provision would fail even the lesser commercial speech standard of review under Central Hudson. The asserted interests that the government had put forward in things like preventing minority groups from being bombarded with demeaning messages and advertising, Justice Alito's opinion described that as just another way of saying that the government seeks to prohibit messages that offend, which strikes at the heart of the First Amendment. The other important opinion in the case was for Justice Kennedy, also for four justices, joined by Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Kennedy agreed that this provision is viewpoint discrimination, which triggers, quote, rigorous constitutional scrutiny, and in light of that holding, he believed it was unnecessary to have an extended discussion of the other arguments. He rejected, in his opinion, several of the government's arguments that this was not an instance of viewpoint discrimination, including, for example, the government argued this was not viewpoint discrimination because it applied to all negative expressions of opinion, regardless of the topic. And Justice Kennedy said that would allow, if that were constitutional, then the government could have a law that banned criticizing all politicians, but that clearly would be inconsistent with the First Amendment. As mentioned, Justice Kennedy found it unnecessary to resolve whether trademarks are commercial speech. He said, however that issue is resolved, the viewpoint-based discrimination at issue here necessarily invokes heightened scrutiny. He rejected the argument that this was a government speech or that it was a permissible government subsidy, and ultimately said because that viewpoint discrimination remains a serious concern, even in the commercial context. Justice Thomas had a very short separate opinion to say, to reiterate his view made in prior cases, that when the government seeks to restrict truthful ideas based on their message, strict scrutiny applies regardless of the commercial context. So I think, to put all of these opinions together, the first thing that we have is a very strong rebuke of viewpoint discrimination. The court is not going to allow the government to evade the longstanding prohibition on viewpoint discrimination by recharacterizing its regulatory program. And it's sending a very strong message that the government may not engage in viewpoint discrimination and prohibit speech, no matter how offensive it is. I think the biggest open question that remains after this opinion concerns the commercial speech doctrine. The court's fractured opinion in the case, combined with the lack of the decision about what is commercial speech, and Justice Kennedy's lack of precision about what standard of review applies, means that there's not nearly as much clarification of that doctrine as many practitioners have hoped for. Lawyers who argue First Amendment cases, especially in the commercial speech area, do, I think, have several new arguments to make in order to attack government regulations based on this opinion. But given the fact that it's a largely 4-4 opinion, and that, again, there is some, that several important questions in the case the court simply set aside because it considered this case fairly easy and straightforward, means that it's less clear than we might have hoped how lower courts will apply this going forward.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.